content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior. Sun Warrior is a premium, all-natural, raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan, plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Enviromedica, makers of Terra Flora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic formulated with a combination of spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Wild Foods, small batch superfoods from around the world. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Wild Foods was founded out of an obsession with finding the best ingredients in the world to support health and longevity. Paleo Magazine, the well-being journal and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off all their products and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Baby, do you want to go higher, baby? I know I do. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis. I'm broadcasting from home again today. It is so crazy, you guys. I don't even know how to explain it, Ronaldo. Does it feel weird for you to not have me there in studio, yes, but do this over the phone?
It's lonely here.
It's lonely.
It's lonely.
Well, we're going to try to fix that for everyone out there listening. Welcome to One Life Radio. As I said, we're live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia and also on KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. So, you know, let's help each other feel good. Call in and let us know what you're thinking, or say hello, or ask a question, or just share a story. The lines are always open at 214-787-1190. And let's get through this together. So we're here to help. And I was preparing for the show. I'm here in my bedroom. It's really crazy. I've thrown blankets up all over the place to provide you all with a better sound. But you know, I've got 10 dogs, Ronaldo, and 13 cats, right?
Yeah.
And then I have a couple of guest cats right now. I'm babysitting or kitty sitting my daughter, my oldest daughter's cats. And but let me go through the list of my dogs and cats. I've got Tom and Willie, named after Tom Petty and Willie Nelson. Mick, named after Mick Jagger. Charlie's just Charlie. He's amazing. He's my latest rescue. Then I've got Brad and Jeff, and I think they're somehow related since we found them together. I think they might be brothers that came from maybe a place where they were breeding animals not far from here. Then we got Pretzel, who got the name Pretzel because I wanted to twist him into a pretzel because he wouldn't stop barking for like 3 years. And then you've got Susie Q. So those are my 10 dogs. And then my cats, I've got Clementine, I've got Butters and Scotch. Nice. They're brothers. They're Butters and then Scotch. Okay, so they're brothers. and I've got Boomer, named after Boomer Sooner, OU. I've got Dean the Dance Machine, and I've got Marie, a cat Marie. She's white, and I believe she's deaf. A lot of white cats are deaf. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they are. So, and she's just as sweet as could be. We found her nearly dead in a parking lot nearby Target over in the Mesquite area. And who am I forgetting? Oh, little Bo and Beans. Beans is just, he's like brownish black, so we named him like Black Beans, so his name is Beans. And then little Bo was named after Julie Andrews' tremendously beautiful book called Little Bo. And it's a great story about a sailor who picks up a little kitten. And cool. It becomes his BFF, and he ends up, you know, spending the rest of his, hopefully both of their lives. The cat, although of course, wouldn't live as long as the sailor. But it's a great little story. If you've never seen the book Little Bo, I encourage you to get a copy. And as I said, it was written by Julie Andrews, and I can't think of a more extraordinary woman. And the book is extraordinary as well. So we have Mary Holland on the line.
Yes.
Hey, Mary, how you doing? Hey,
good, how are
I'm
you?
Doing well. Did you? I'm good. Did you like my dissertation about all my pets?
I am impressed. I don't think I can manage that many pets. I've had one or two at a time, but never as many as all that.
Well, you know, today's bath day, so we bath them all about once every 4 to 6 weeks, depending upon the dog. And all the grooming places are closed, so we're having to groom them, even the ones that are all getting haircuts this morning, too. So, but it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And for those of you maybe listening for the first time to Mary on the show, she serves as the general counsel and vice chair on the board of the Children's Health Defense. She recently left the faculty of the New York University School of Law, where she served for 17 years, most recently directing its graduate lawyering program. Mary received her Master's of Arts and Juris Doctor degrees from Columbia University and her undergraduate degree from Harvard. She has worked in international public and private law. She is the co-author of Vaccine Epidemic and the HPV Vaccine on Trial, Seeking Justice for a Generation Betrayed. And it's always an honor to have her on the show. You're in for a treat. Today we're talking about censorship around the COVID-19 shutdown. So this is a huge topic, Mary. It really is. So I understand that Mailchimp recently canceled the Children's Health Defense account, citing that spamming as the reason for cancellation. They essentially stopped the group's ability to send informational emails. Is this a way of censoring the Children's Health Defense, do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, they didn't say that explicitly, Bernadette, but we had been a customer for 3 years. We had, you know, a multi-thousand email list that we used through them. We paid our bills on time. And only on the day after we sent around an email about criticizing the government's policy about not focusing enough on therapeutic interventions for COVID-19, but focusing instead on vaccine development. When that came out, we were criticizing Bill Gates, who's been funding a lot of these efforts, and Dr. Tony Fauci. Immediately, Mailchimp cut us off. And so we protested and said, why are you doing this? We are adhering to your policies. There's nothing that we've said that is inaccurate or that is, you know, violated your guidelines. And nonetheless, they would not reinstate us. So we had to find another platform. And one of the things that we and other groups are experiencing is on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram, certain things will not be posted, or a message mm-hmm. will come from the platform saying, you know, for truthful information about vaccines, go to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or go to the World Health Organization. And mm-hmm. that's even in the case where all of the information that we post at Children's Health Defense, Bernadette, we have verified. It is all from really credible sources. So it's very troubling that this information is being suppressed. Another example I can give you is another instance is on Sunday, the New York Times ran a story about fake theories around the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic, and it mentioned Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our chairman, and it mentioned Children's Health Defense, but no reporter ever contacted us to verify their information. No one allowed us the opportunity to give a comment in response to their reporting. So it's mm-hmm. it's troubling.
It is troubling. Well, you know, it's really coincidental that 2 days ago I was in, I believe it was Whole Foods, and I saw this special edition of the New York Times, Understanding Autism. I have it here in my hand. It talks about the research and science, family matters, help and support. They only address vaccines in one part of the magazine, and it is a very small article that says, no, the measles vaccine does not cause autism, and it goes on to basically discredit everyone who doesn't believe right. what they believe.
Right. I haven't seen that, but that's fascinating. I mean, that is the narrative, even though, Bernadette, as you recognize, when they had almost 20 years ago, this omnibus autism proceeding, the federal government and the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention acknowledged that a vaccine had led to one child's autism. It had led to her seizures and to her brain damage and to her mm-hmm. autism. And they compensated her for $15 million for the rest of her life. So the idea that somehow this is not true is amazing. And I think I even mentioned last time I was on your show that one of our sister organizations, the Informed Consent Action Network, sued the CDC to get information about what is the science behind their claim that vaccines don't cause autism. And finally, a judge forced the CDC to hand over the 20 studies that they said that underlined that claim. And what became completely obvious is that there's very little science, and it does not touch on at all most of the vaccines that are given to these children. So, you know, unfortunately, what we're seeing is not only like is a certain point of view not being represented, but another example, Bernadette, is all of the countries around the world, certainly the United States, has put a great deal of store by a set of projections about the trajectory of this infectious disease. And that study was at the Imperial College of London. Well, we already know that that Imperial College of London predictive study was not peer reviewed. No one had looked over the computer code, and we know it was off by at least 2,000%. And yet the mainstream media is not talking about how, why did we have a model that was so far off? What does it mean to all of these shutdown policies that we have in place because of that model that we now know is in a completely inaccurate model? That's a kind of another dimension of the censorship that we see.
Oh, gosh, and the censorship. I mean, they've been censoring Texans for vaccine choice, you know, account last year, citing a similar reason. We've been censored at One Life Radio going back 2.5, almost 3 years, because I put a post tagging the FDA and the Wrigley's Gum Company for putting aspartame in all the gum out there. I was at a Target one night and just was astounded that, like, and they're all targeted towards children as well. You know, a lot of children that eat bubble gum and things like that. And anyway, we've gotten flagged too. So I feel like, you know, our first amendments are really being violated here. And I can't think of anyone better to speak with this about than you as a former faculty member of New York University, a School of Law, where you served for 17 years. But we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about it. Everyone, stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss it. More coming up with Mary Holland. Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and I am on the line with Mary Holland. She serves as general counsel and vice chair of the board at Children's Health Defense. She recently left the faculty of New York University School of Law, where she served for 17 years, most recently directing its graduate lawyering program. Mary received her Master's of Arts and her Juris Doctor degrees from Columbia University and her undergraduate degree from Harvard. She has worked in international public and private law, and she is the author of Vaccine Epidemic and the HPV Vaccine on Trial, Seeking Justice for a Generation Betrayed. So great to have you with us. You know, I have so many questions for you. I wish I could keep you on the line for hours. You know, first and foremost, our First Amendments are being violated. Yeah. You as a law professor, what do you say to our government?
Yeah. Well, there's no question that the very First Amendment to the Constitution gives us freedom of expression and the free exercise of religion and freedom of assembly and the right to petition the government for grievances and a free press. And all of those rights, we were just talking about, you know, the free press, all of those rights are being impinged on. Now, the reality is, Bernadette, that you know, our constitutional law that's evolved over 200 years recognizes that there will be emergencies and there are lawful times when the government can restrict our First Amendment rights. But it has to be done in a non-discriminatory way, and it has to be proportionate to the threat. And so, as you may know, there are challenges that are now being filed around the country, particularly against governors, saying you are going way beyond what is necessary. For instance, I was looking at a challenge in Connecticut that was filed yesterday or filed over the weekend. And it was a challenge, the governor says everybody has to wear masks. And the person said, that's really infringing on my ability of expression. I don't want to wear a mask. And there's no proof. You have no proof that this is going to protect anyone from disease. And you're interfering with my ability to breathe. In fact, some people would say that the masks actually make it worse because you pull them on and off. And then you have this reservoir of kind of, you know, aerosol and liquid. So I think everybody at the very beginning of this pandemic thought, okay, the government is in a crisis and deserves a certain benefit of the doubt. But it's now 5 weeks. And as I mentioned, the epidemic trajectory has changed dramatically, according to some very credible scientists. And so I think the restrictions on rights are questionable. And there are those who are suggesting that this has to continue until they come up with a vaccine. There is no vaccine against COVID-19. There's lots of efforts trying to develop them very quickly. An inside pharmaceutical blog called Fierce Pharma has given the efforts that are already in human trials a 5 or 15% chance of actually being able to become vaccines for wide use. I believe that we're waiting for this mirage. You know, the idea that Bill Gates says, oh, well, we'll just have to stay in lockdown for 18 months or 2 years. It's like, well, maybe you can do that, Mr. Billionaire, but normal people can't do that. And I mean, the people who are protesting Bernadette, they're talking about not having enough food. I mean, you know, governments don't have endless supplies of money to keep people on the dole. So nobody should believe that there's not a serious infectious disease out there. There is. But I think one of the things you inspire your listeners to every day is you don't have to feel completely fragile. People who are healthy, who do things to boost their immune system, are unlikely to have severe symptoms. There are some good therapeutics that are known right now. Hydroxychloroquine with the Z-Pak is known to be really successful from China and France and is in trials in the United States. Intravenous vitamin C. There are a lot, you know, just vitamin supplementation, vitamin D. We put out a publication last week, you know, vitamin D. Most people in the Northern Hemisphere don't have enough vitamin D. There's really good science that vitamin D deficiency can contribute to respiratory ailments. So I think, you know, it's wrongheaded to think that we're just going to all stay in lockdown indefinitely until this miracle vaccine shows up. And as you and I have discussed before, Bernadette, you know, the vaccines that we have on the market today for children are not miracle vaccines. Mm-hmm. And some children are injured. And the liability issues don't work very well. And the liability issues for this new COVID-19 vaccine they're working on are even worse. There's something that because there's a declared pandemic, everything in the way of drugs and vaccines that's developed now is considered to be a quote unquote covered countermeasure. And there's basically no liability whatsoever. So if you die, tough luck. If you are injured for life, you get paralyzed or you have neurological damage, tough luck. That's what's really going to happen. You're going to be out of luck. And people need to understand that these vaccines have never been developed before. They're rushing them through. We already see them cutting corners. And God forbid that you are injured or you die, there's going to be no remedy. There's going to be no real compensation. So I think we have to reorient and look at, like, what can we do now to stay healthy?
Well, yeah, and I mean, gosh, there's so much I want to say. I'm looking at Nature magazine right now. This is just from a couple of weeks ago, and it says that one of the leading scientists in the world that's being featured in this magazine, it's a scientific magazine, that the risk of injecting a live bacterium into the bloodstream needs to be better understood, along with a lot of other comments that we cannot rush this vaccine for multiple reasons. And then I'm looking at another article here. We've talked about this before, about Japan. Why Japan banned the MMR vaccine. They stopped using it 7 years ago, virtually the only developed nation to turn its back, as it says, on the jab that government health chiefs claim a four-year experiment with has had serious financial and human costs. And I mean, and yet, so we've got companies sophisticated, countries like Japan turning away the MMR, and yet still we're not willing to sit down and talk about this? I mean, shouldn't there be a congressional hearing specifically about this topic?
Absolutely. So we are actually calling Bernadette for a congressional hearing, especially about where did this virus come from? That's a really important question in terms of figuring out how to address it. If this really was sort of out of, you know, natural evolution, that's one thing. If this was due to a lab accident, as we suspect it was, then we need to have a congressional hearing about that. So this doesn't, so we understand it. That may help us to figure out what are the right ways to treat people so that they get better faster. And then we have to prevent this happening again. So yes, we need congressional investigations. We need all kinds, and we need to be able to have a serious discourse. As I said, you know, the New York Times just slammed Bobby Kennedy and Children's Health Defense and, you know, assailed us as anti-vaxxers and anti-science and flat earthers. And we're used to all those names. And you know, why can't we have a civil debate? Japan not only got rid of the MMR vaccine, they got rid of the HPV vaccine, allegedly against cervical cancer. Japan got rid of the whole cell DPT vaccine before we did. Japan has been much more safety-oriented as a developed country than any other country I know. And they also, they have some social distancing. They've taken this virus very seriously, but they haven't had the same kind of lockdown that we're having here in New York, where, or in, you know, the country, where already we have millions of people who've been thrown out of work. I mean, it's been tunnel vision, Bernadette. The thing that I find so objectionable is we've had this tunnel vision. And I get it. This infection is serious, and some people have died, and that's terrible, and I'm really sorry for the families and for the healthcare workers, but you can't look at this problem in isolation. You know, what about all the other people who can't get their elective medical procedures done? What about all the people who now can't feed their families? What about all the people who can't pay their rent and are soon to be homeless? Like, you can't look at one tiny slice of health. What about all the people who are isolated? What about all the terrible elderly people who've died alone without the comfort of a loved one with them? I mean, all of this is what's happening. And yet what our health officials, you know, and what the World Health Organization has been tunnel vision focused on is COVID-19. And that's just really such a small part of the whole equation.
It is. And I, you know, I can't wait for you to come back on the show. I have so many things I want to discuss with you, and I want our listeners to know. And it's not a political issue. This is not a left or a right thing.
But it's not.
It's not. But for some people, they won't even listen because they think it's a conspiracy theorist, a far right, a belief.
I know.
And it's like, open your damn minds is what I want to tell people. My opinion, and I probably am going to have a panic attack after I say this, but I think based on the 25 books that I have read now and studied this for over 23 years since I was pregnant with my first child, I think it just may be one of the biggest, most profitable lies we've ever been told.
There's a lot to that. There's a lot to that. I mean, it needs to be studied. It needs to be studied. They do sham vaccine trials. They cover up the injuries. They won't let us talk about vaccines and autism. They won't let us talk about therapeutics against COVID-19. Clearly, there are interested parties who are deciding what the narrative is. You know, Dr. Fauci has patents for different vaccines or things that could go into vaccines. His institute makes a lot of money on the development of vaccines. He has close contacts. So we've got to get some people who are not captured by industry talking to us about this. It unfortunately, mm-hmm. it's very biased. What we're getting, the information is very biased. But I agree with you. We are a non-political organization, and people need to be able to have real conversations about this outside of politics. It's not political. This is about our future. This is about the global future.
So good to always have you with us.
Thank you so much, Brenda. My pleasure. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
LA, on a Saturday night in the summer, sundown and they all come out. Lamborghinis and they're renting hummus. The party's on, so they're heading downtown. Everybody's looking for a come up.
Welcome back to One Life Radio. Are you there, guys? Oh, my gosh. This has been crazy.
No, it's just a connection. That's fine.
Hey, Jill.
Hey, Bern. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you, too. You know, you've been on the show from the very beginning. We have been through some ups and downs. Today will be memorable. That's for sure. You know, it's always great to have you on the show. Jill Lane is a pro athlete, health and nutrition coach, and founder of Fueling Champions, which is a three-step sports performance and athletic nutrition program built to maximize the potential of student athletes and the parents that support them. You can find her on Instagram at Team Fueling Champions or her website, fuelingchampions.org. Today we're talking about the article Protein Anxiety that we started to cover a couple of weeks ago but never really got to the meat of it, no pun intended. Is there really such a thing as too much protein, Jill?
Yeah, I mean, there's such a thing as too much anything. Even water in too much of a level can be dangerous to the body. So there is such a thing as too much protein, just like there is with anything else. But I think the fear around eating too much protein is misplaced. Instead of us really staring in the face of the fact that we're eating too much sugar, maybe not exercising enough, and definitely not eating enough vegetables, we want to put the blame on eating too much protein or cause worry about eating too much protein when really I think that fear is misplaced.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, this article that we're talking about today that was in the Times Special Edition, The Science of Nutrition, it starts off by saying that Americans consume the most protein annually, but most are still unsure if they are still getting enough, which I find shocking because protein, it's just, I think it's overconsumed based on what I see, the average American. But as a review, can you break down what protein basically is, what kinds of proteins there are, and why we need it, and why it's a matter of importance in our nutrition?
Yeah, so protein is one of our three primary macronutrients, and macro means big. So it's a big place where we get our nutrition and calories from. The other two are fats and carbohydrates. And so protein is composed of things called amino acids. And I've been watching a lot of that show called Lego Masters with my kids, especially during this time right now.
Yeah.
It's a great show. And if you think of amino acids like Legos, we eat protein either in the form of plant or animal protein. And it's like having a composed Lego set. But when that Lego set or the protein gets inside our digestive tract, our body takes it apart, kind of like we can do with Legos. We can take it apart, a set, and turn it into something else. And that's what the really cool thing is about protein. We take apart the protein and take apart the amino acids, and then we reuse those amino acids in a variety of different ways in the body. And I work in sports, and so we think of protein when it comes to sports and athletic nutrition as something that helps with muscle. But protein and amino acids do so much more in the body. They help with methylation. They help build mood chemicals. Because they help with methylation, they help with heart health. They help build enzymes. They are actively like enzymes in certain reactions in the body. They're really important at building collagen. There's 2 to 3 amino acids that actually build collagen, which is really important for joint health and structures in our body. So protein is not just about maintaining and adding muscle. It's important for almost every system in the body. And that's why we shouldn't be afraid to eat protein.
I agree. Well, you talk about, or you spoke of methylation. Can you explain methylation in, like, non-scientific terms?
Sure. So methylation is basically a process that the body uses. Think of it like this. We have a chemical. It's a way that the body changes thing A into thing B into thing C. It's kind of like a Dr. Seuss book right now. Thing A needs to get turned into thing B and then it's converted into thing C. And there's a pathway in the body called the methylation pathway. And that's essentially what it does. It's taking methyl groups, which is a combination of carbon and hydrogens in the body, abbreviated as CH3 for all the science nerds listening. It takes these methyl groups and it either attaches them or removes them from different chemicals, thing A to thing B to thing C. And if we don't do that appropriately, if we don't have enough like methionine, which is an essential amino acid, we can't make it. We have to eat it. If we don't have B12, which comes from a lot of animal proteins, it's not abundantly found at all unless it's subsidized in the plant world. We don't have enough of these things, which we need in that process of changing A, B, and C in the body, then we have some buildup of like a backlog, a clogging, if you will. And the things that build up in the body, one of them is known as homocysteine. And homocysteine is an inflammatory-like molecule, which has been linked to higher risk of certain aspects of heart disease. And methylation is really important for our mood chemicals. And so methylation is a really key chemical reaction or series of chemical reactions in the body that if we're not really good at it, and sometimes we're genetically predisposed to being really bad at it, and you can usually see this in a family tree with high risk of heart disease, high risk of infertility, unfortunately, and even high risk of cancer. When you look at the genetics of people who have that in their family, they usually have what we call some methylation defects. And the cool thing is that we can use protein and certain vitamins like natural folate and B12 to help assist our crappy genetics sometimes. And that's why nutrition is so important.
Well, is it crappy genetics, though, or is it the overconsumption of sugar? How does sugar affect methylation in the body?
Well, sugar doesn't really dramatically affect methylation. Methylation is a chemical reaction that requires some cofactors, and it requires certain types of genetics to be in play. And so if you're genetically predisposed, you know, if you have you're supposed to be a car with 4 tires and you come out a car with 3 tires, sugar doesn't affect that missing tire. So, you know, some things, sugar, you know, has its downfalls. It's inflammatory. It can, you know, it's overconsumption of sugar can raise inflammatory risk and dampen immune function. But we don't want to blame faulty methylation really on sugar directly.
Okay. Well, you know, in this article, it states that we've got about a minute before we go to break. In this article, it states that the average American eats too much protein and that eating too much protein has serious health consequences. What do you say about that?
Well, I would respectfully disagree. There's really only one well-known, well-researched group that has what we call a contraindication to eating, quote-unquote, a lot of protein, and that's those with pre-established kidney disease. And there are people who have kidney issues, and it doesn't mean they can't eat protein. They just have to monitor the amount of protein that they consume. But for the rest of us, as I mentioned before, we need those amino acids to do stuff in our body. It's critical. someone's depression could really be from the fact that they don't have enough B12, folate, and amino acids because they're not eating a protein-rich diet. Someone might have frequent bruising or not heal from surgery or injury because they don't have enough iron and amino acids from their diet. And so we need to just really be smart about the fact that protein is an essential nutrient. There's 9 amino acids that our body cannot make. They're called essential amino acids, which means we have to get them through food. So protein is critical to a healthy diet, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to break. I love having Jolene on the line with us. She's truly like an encyclopedia of nutrition knowledge. We'll be right back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
It's 12 past midnight. Don't close your eyes. Your soul's up alive, and I'll be by your side. I've come to take you there, show you how to care. Just be aware that you'll have to share. I want your love. I want it tonight.
Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and Jill Lane is on the line with us. She is a pro athlete, health and nutrition coach, and founder of Fueling Champions. You can find her on Instagram at Team Fueling Champions or her website, fuelingchampions.org. She has a great sports performance and athletic nutrition program built to maximize the potential of student athletes and the parents that support them. During the break, we got a call from Catherine. Jill, are you ready to answer her question?
I'm ready. I hope I have the answer.
You ready? I hope you do, too. This is so crazy doing this from my home in my bedroom. I have to tell everybody out there listening. the song, I Want to Be Sedated, that played a couple of segments ago, I'm like, yeah, I want to be sedated right after I go off the air. But but they asked the question, what are the best foods to get the amino acids that we need and protein? What do you say to Catherine?
Well, I say variety is king. One thing from this article that I liked, that I agreed with, is that most people don't eat enough variety of foods in general, really. Most of us eat like the same 12 foods over and over again, and our children are like the worst victims of this. And so when it comes to nutrition, really, especially protein, variety is king. So when we think protein, we always think animals. We think beef and bison, right, and chicken and turkey and eggs, but don't forget that we can get a variety of amino acids from plants like quinoa, chia, soy, lentils like beans and peas and legumes. And so what I do in my own business is encourage lots of variety because it broadens the amino acid ratios we're getting in food and the amino acid quantities that we're getting in food. This is kind of where sometimes the vegan and vegetarians get tripped up, is that they just stick with the same maybe plant-based protein all the time. Maybe they just really only focus on soy, or maybe they're not eating soy, and so they're just eating, you know, one other thing, and they're not getting enough variety of the amino acids into their amino acid pool in the body, and because of that, they may have some health struggles. And the same thing goes for the meat eaters. They stick with only just eating grass-fed beef, which we love, but maybe they're not also eating pastured eggs, or they're not eating salmon and getting some of the other health benefits. So really the answer to that would be variety. Variety is king. Lots of different variety, as much variety as you can, and to spread it out throughout the day. That's really the two things I would say most people do wrong when it comes to protein. They don't eat a variety of quote-unquote clean sources, and they don't spread it out throughout the day, which research tells us is key to protein consumption.
Yeah, I see, and I forgot that because we haven't talked about that in a long time. But, okay, so broccoli even has protein in it, though. Oatmeal has protein in it. Do those types of foods like broccoli, do they have the any of or all of the 9 essential amino acids that you're speaking of?
Yeah, so it's kind of a labeling misnomer when you read that something like that is proteinate, because what they don't have is that they don't have a complete protein. They have amino acids in them. What we don't mm-hmm. know is which grouping of amino acids and does that complete or make a complete protein. And so they have different plants, especially, don't have intact all of the different non-essential and essential amino acids. And so that's why combining foods is a big deal. That's why food combining in the vegan vegetarian world has been around for a long time. You eat rice with beans because the thought was it makes closer to a complete protein, a complete package of amino acids, similar to the way aminos come out of meat. Now, there's some debate whether that's the way the body really works, if it needs all of the amino acids together at that moment, like you would eat them in an animal-based protein, for the body to utilize them in its best way, or whether it's kind of like it can store or utilize the proteins as they come in, spread throughout the day. That really the jury is still out on that. But yes, amino acids are present in plants. They're closer to being a complete amino acid in things like soy.
I need to cut you off. I apologize immensely. We've got to go. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. Jill, thank you for jumping on the air with us. Sorry for all of the discourse. We'll be back tomorrow. If the creek doesn't rise, you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.